Welcome back for another helping of oysters, clams, and katanas. Presented by Bolin Media, I am Ross Bolin-sama, here today with Barrett Dudley-sama, to digest and discuss episode 4 of Shogun on Hulu/FX.
More like oysters, clams, and cannons, am I right?
Yeah, big time cannon episode, dude. Gotta love a good cannon.
Yeah.
Gotta love a good canon. Before we dive into Chapter 4 of Shogun, Barrett and I finally got to see Dune Part 2 in theaters this past weekend, and on Monday we recorded an hour-long discussion and review of the film. You may be thinking, I would love to hear and or watch that discussion and review. Well, I've got news for you, friend. You can, and it won't cost you a dime. Right now on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles, you can sign up for a 7-day free trial. That's 7 days of membership for free, and you can enjoy our entire discussion and review of Dune Part 2 in either audio form by joining the Clam Fam tier, or have video as an option by joining the Mollusk Militia. In addition to our Dune Part 2 discussion and review, subscribing on Patreon will also give you access to the other movies we have discussed and reviewed over the years, like Saltburn, Oppenheimer, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Parasite, Interstellar, Joker, Casino Royale, Tenet, 1917, Ex Machina, The Talented Mr. Ripley, Booksmart, Knives Out, and more, Barrett.
Wow.
It's a lot.
Wow.
It's a lot. And of course, patreon.com/oystersclamscockles is also home to our entire companion podcast for every single episode of HBO's classic crime drama, The Sopranos, our bonus coverage of Shogun, as well as bonus coverage for House of the Dragon, Succession, The White Lotus, The Last of Us, Foundation, Silo, and most recently, True Detective Night Country. Again, right now, it's completely free for you to join for 7 days, and then it's just $5 per month to join the Clam Fam tier, or $10 per month to join the Mollusk Militia and gain access to full video of every episode, plus the Mollusk Militia exclusive hotline for a chance to be featured on the show, and the Mollusk Militia exclusive Discord as well. All of this while supporting your favorite podcast. What a deal! Act now, as this 7-day free trial won't be available forever. And remember, he who controls the spice controls the universe. Now let's dive into Chapter 4 of Shogun, titled The Eightfold Fence. Barrett, are you ready?
I'm ready.
We start out with Omi, Yabushige's nephew, and the people of the fishing village Ajiro preparing for the arrival of Yabushige and Toranaga. Now, we were already in this village, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, we spent time here already.
Yes.
Okay, so we're just...
This is Yabushige's...
His hometown.
This is his hometown. This is the main hub of his fief.
Yeah, and Omi is his nephew.
Is his nephew.
And he's left him in charge to run this place,
and,
right?
And you gather through context clues that Omi's pops, the big homie,
yeah,
was the leader, was the you know,
head of the town.
The head of the town, the head of this fief, and then passed and it went to Yabushige.
Got it. Okay.
Not directly to Omi, which that's my takeaway. That's what I gathered from episode 1 and 2, I believe.
Okay.
And on into, because now, you know, we're setting up the stage for maybe a little tension between old Omi and Big Yabs.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. If that is the case, some of the lines in this episode later on,
right,
have even more meaning.
Yeah. I could be wrong, by the way. Maybe Yabushige has always been in control, and his brother was just like the right hand man, and then he died, and then Omi, followed in line to be the new right hand man,
the homie Omi.
Yeah, the homie Omi and Big Yabs, as we know.
Them. Everyone calls them that.
Everyone calls them that. Yeah.
So yeah, the people of Ajiro are sweeping porches, washing blood off the docks and whatnot. I couldn't tell if that was like fish blood or like execution blood.
Well, they're cleaning the decks there, and then somebody throws a bucket full of red stuff.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a bucket full of water.
No, it
and
was.
And it splashed on the deck and became red because the deck was so covered in blood.
I'm pretty sure that I saw somebody throw a bucket of red stuff because I said to myself, well, that
doesn't
help.
Make sense.
That didn't help. But no, the town's getting cleaned up. I liked how even the dogs were like scurrying around.
Yeah.
Like,
everybody's
hyped. Toranaga's coming. He's coming.
Yeah.
We got to, you know.
They want to make a good impression.
They want to make a good impression too. Yeah. Yeah.
And on the ship over, Usami Fuji, the favorite granddaughter of Hiromatsu, who just recently lost her husband and infant child, is told she will now be consort to the newest Hatamoto, our John Blackthorne. And she is pissed.
Yeah.
She's not immediately stoked about this new assignment. She begs to leave the clan and become a nun rather than serve the barbarian. and is not granted that request because Toda Mariko talks her into it, talks her into giving it a try at least, right? So consort for Blackthorn she will become. Also on the ship over, Torunaga's son, Nagakado. Torunaga's son. We haven't gotten a lot of insight.
Just a few pop-ins with him.
Just knew he was Torunaga's boy. That was it. That's all we knew.
Yeah. And we have been given some small clues that he wants more respect from his dad.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, which seems to kind of be a running theme throughout history in the case of these really powerful lords.
Right. Right.
They've always got at least one son who's like, I want respect.
Yes.
Like the dude in The Godfather.
That's right.
I'm smart. I'm not dumb like people say. So
who says that?
I can't remember his name because I'm focused on Shogun, but Michael Corleone's older brother, Fredo, in The Godfather.
Fredo. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I want respect.
The turd out there. Fredo's a turd out
there. Huge turd out there. So Nagakoto lets Yabushige know that his father, Torunaga, has resigned from the Council of Regents. And Yabushige, he freaks out, thinking they're all going to die, right? He says, I assume it's proper for you to commit seppuku at once. And it's funny how Torunaga, first of all, never tells Yabushige anything.
No.
Never tells him anything in advance, even after Yabushige explicitly says in episode 3, just once, I would like to know about the plan before it unfolds. But Yabushige provides a good deal of comic relief on this show, very similar to the way that Stilgar does in Dune Part 2. It's sort of like the same type of comic relief. He's a great character. Yeah, still my favorite.
There's a line in here, right, isn't it, at the beginning, where he basically, I think he tells his son, where he's basically like, yeah, we're not telling that guy shit. Like, he's, you know what I mean? Like, he's our ally, but
we're keeping him in the dark.
But we're keeping him in the dark because that's what you got to do for a guy that, for a guy like Big Yabs that has designs on being loyal to a potential other, you know, head honcho.
Here. Right, which makes it really interesting that, like, you know, they roll up here to Ajiro. They see all Yabushige's army on the dock waiting and cheering. This whole, you know, we'll get into the whole welcome party, that how it mm-hmm. transpires. But, like, the fact that Torunaga, knowing that he does not trust this man as far as he can throw him, still leaves him in charge of, you know, this whole situation, chaining this regiment, Blackthorn being there. He leaves his son with him, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And just pieces out. Like, I couldn't get a feel. Like, what I'm asking is, I couldn't tell if Torunaga made a misstep here.
Yeah, right.
In this episode, or he kind of knew how things would shake out.
That's a good question. And let's put a pin in it, and we can save it the conclusion of the episode, because I had the same question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they float up to Ajiro. They see all the people out there waving, cheering, and whatnot. Blackthorn and Omi, who peed on his head earlier this season.
These guys are still beefing.
They're reintroduced.
Yeah.
And, well, now Blackthorn's picked up a little bit more respect, right, as Hatamoto. He can't be disrespected the same way he was. He's not just a prisoner. The soldiers all do the Yabushige-sama, ho! They do the chant, right?
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
Then Torunaga gives a speech about protecting Japan from the treachery of those who would stain the Taiko's legacy, and then the soldiers all do the Torunaga-sama, ho! Chant, which you could... I got the feeling like Yabushige was so hyped on his name chant, and then when Torunaga
rubbing him the wrong way, for sure.
Turned it into a Torunaga chant, and he was just like, oh, my chant doesn't mean so much now.
Well, and he's like Torunaga's kind of like, he's egging him on. He's waving the fan.
Yeah.
He's like really like hyping him up. He gives that rousing speech. And yeah, there's definitely like a little, like, you know, there's a cut to Yabushige, who's a little concerned by that,
I think. A little put off.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But these guys, well, they're his, this is his.
It's his army.
It's his army. And all of a sudden they're like being like, maybe like a little bit louder for Torunaga.
Right. just a little bit louder. I also loved how Torunaga, just like, there's no discontinuation. He's leading that chant as he boards his little boat.
He just gets right back on the dinghy.
And he's still doing it like from the water, waving the fan and getting them to keep chanting as he's floating away without saying goodbye, without giving an explanation that he's leaving.
It's a classic Japanese exit.
Yeah, he just bails. And now, to what purpose? Again, we do not know. We don't really know.
It's a little Irish exit joke.
Right, I got it. That was great.
For those of you.
For those of you who didn't pick it up.
They didn't pick that up. Yeah.
That was great. No, but we don't know why he decides to go this route. He leaves, and his son informs Yabushige that they have to fully train their gun regiment before Torunaga returns. That's the only little bit of information we're given here.
Yeah, and I will toss this in here right now that he does. It seems like he feels okay about leaving the town in the hands of Yabushige and his son, and Blackthorn's there, and Mariko's there,
yeah,
and Fuji's there. Like, he's got players in the game here.
Very much so.
So it seems like he's like, okay, like...
Things here will be good.
Things here will be good. I got to go take care of some shit. Yeah.
Yeah. I just worry that that's in part because he trusts his...
Son.
Idiot son too much.
Right.
Which, again, we can discuss at the end. So Blackthorn wanders around Ajiro trying to find his men, right? Because last time he was here, his men were still here. We saw Yabushige boil one of them alive, right? They were left there when he was shipped off to Osaka. Turns out, though, his men were moved to a different place. We are told they're safe for now. And Blackthorn also wants to reclaim his ship, as he believed he would get to... He understood that his part of the deal was like, all right, I'll become Hatamoto... I'll train up this regiment. In return, I get my ship and my men back. But Toda Mariko informs him he is mistaken, and the ship and his crew now belong to Torunaga-sama.
Yeah.
So, not such a sweet deal at that point. You're kind of like feeling for Blackthorn, like, okay, you got talked into this thing, but as he puts it, like, nah, I'm still a prisoner, just with different circumstances.
Right.
Right? Toda Mariko tells him he has nicer
living quarters.
Yeah.
More respect, but yeah, still kind of... Kind of a
prisoner. He's stuck there. He can't leave.
Right.
He's got the generous salary of 240 generous cuckoos a year, as he puts it. Fuji as a consort, whom he does not wish to pillow on around or anywhere near. Plus the new house with the staff. It's a great setup. Like, I get why he's bummed about it.
To be in a debt, you know, obviously there's a lot of drawbacks to living in this time period, right? You got the whole seppuku thing, no modern medicine, right?
Total lack of technology.
Lack of technology.
Which might be a plus for some of us. Not a single cell phone. You'll notice nobody ever gets on Instagram
here.
Ajiro.
Yeah, no doom scrolling.
No.
But man, what a treat to have a consort. And doesn't have to be a female. Like, give me a male consort.
It's like
that's fine.
A life assistant.
It's just a life assistant. Exactly.
Taking care of your finances.
Yes.
Running your house for you.
This person won't go to bed until you go to bed.
Will not sleep while you are up.
Yeah. Because what if you need something?
They're there for you.
Yeah. And this is like, and it's like built into the economics, right? That you just get, like, everybody has a, you just have a consort.
Yeah. Well, if you're high up enough.
If you're a Sama.
Right.
If you earn the...
the title of Sama.
Yeah. If your station in life... earns you a Sama at the end of your name, you just have a consort.
Consort it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty sick.
I guess if you know, somewhere along the line on the trajectory of Bolin Mita, you may find yourself with an executive assistant at some point.
Maybe one day.
That'd sort of be like a consort.
It's kind of the same.
But it'd only
be
a business consort.
Yeah.
And I might prefer the personal life consort.
I would prefer the personal life consort. I need that much, much more. Then I need a business one.
Yeah.
Somebody to keep the house in order.
Right.
And my finances. My God, we all know I need that.
I once had an idea for a business that was going to be like, it was in college, and it was basically for like, I still actually think, somebody can have this. If you've got the legs to run with this, I still think it's a brilliant idea. It's basically like a rent-a-mom for college kids.
Okay.
And like in your college towns, wherever, you just like, you round up a squad of like empty nester moms.
Yeah.
And then you assign them like, you know, somewhere in between 3 and 7-ish clients maybe.
Okay.
And they just serve as the moms for the kids, for the young adults.
So you're saying like doing laundry,
meal prep, waking them up in the morning.
Make sure they're up on time
for class and such. Maybe an evening check-in, just a quick, hey, did you do your homework? I can't make you do anything, but did you do it? Just lay on a little bit of a classic
so
mom
somebody's
guilt trip.
There to check, yeah.
Somebody's, yeah, right.
Maybe set out some outfit for the next day.
I mean, you know, we'd offer different tiers, obviously.
Oh, yeah, that would be the highest tier, probably.
And I think the outfit laying out would be in the highest one. But and it's kind of the same thing. It's like a consort for college kids. But
highest tier also includes her coming into your room and being Big Spoon for a few minutes every night?
Maybe.
just hold you.
Yeah. I mean, we're getting a little too close to the pillowing there with, your, with your rent-a-mom. So, you know.
We're sliding slowly towards prostitution.
Towards an escort service, yeah.
Yeah, no, so, now it's just a courtesan.
We got to establish some parameters.
Courtesan, right, is what they call the prostitutes?
I was
saying courtesan. People were all on my ass about this. This is one of 40 words in the last 2 weeks that people in the Clam fam have yelled at me about. Courtesan. I got it now. Thank you to everybody online.
At least you haven't been saying Star Wars like an asshole for the last decade.
For those of you who do listen to our Dune Part 2 coverage, you'll have more insight into that that note from Barrett.
Okay, go on.
Anyway, moving on. Yeah, so she also tells Blackthorne that training up this regiment is going to take at least 6 months. He's just generally upset and confused by this whole thing. The fact that Toranaga bailed, being given all this stuff.
Do you think he got rope-a-doped by Toranaga a little bit?
A little bit, yeah. Okay. A little bit.
I mean, I don't feel like he... I think he just maybe... He went a little bit too far in his mind, like thinking that he was going to get the ship and the men kind of immediately.
And just be able to do whatever he wants with them.
Yeah,
in hindsight, that was a silly idea.
I thought it was more like an agreement, like, no, you do this, and then you can have your ship and your men back.
Right.
Maybe.
Yeah. Well, I think Blackthorne was also trying to push it a little too.
Yeah,
like,
right,
let's
right.
see if I can, maybe instead of having to deal with all this, just get my ship and my men right now.
Yes.
Right? And
yeah,
like,
yeah.
That would have been dumb.
Right.
Toranaga knows if he gives him his ship and his men right now,
yeah,
there's a good chance he's going to bail.
Exactly. He just watched him pull the sideswipe maneuver.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you don't think this dude has another trick up his sleeve? Of course
right,
he does.
Right. So I think you're right. Blackthorne probably should have... had a better idea of what he was walking into here. The other thing to note by Mariko's comment about training up the regiment taking 6 months, a lot of time passes in this episode. You're supposed to pick up on the fact, like he's learning Japanese, right? Picking up more and more of the language. And just like in past episodes, as we spoke, like the cuts in this one, like it's letting you know, like shit is happening.
Mm. So how much time do you think has passed?
In this episode alone, I think many weeks pass.
Okay.
Many, many weeks. Because by the end, the regiment is very well trained.
Like, are you thinking 1 month or 2 months?
2+.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They didn't do a very good job of letting me know that much time had passed.
I think you had to read into this line.
Why does it... Which line?
That it would take up to 6 months or more to train the regiment.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Why do you think... But Jovan comes at the end of the episode... Why didn't they send his ass down there way earlier? You think it's been they've just been letting Yabushige float in the wind for 2 months?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he had to make travel plans,
I'm thinking like a month. I'm thinking like a month has passed.
Okay. Well, but way more time than it would usually feel. When you watch an episode of TV, it's easy to be like, all right, that
this
was
a day.
That was a day. Yeah. This was a three-day episode. Like, I feel like this, it was supposed to be implied that there is more time passing here.
Okay.
Based on how much Japanese he picks up, how much he settles into the culture, right? How much progress he makes with Mariko and Fuji.
Yep. Yeah, sure.
And the regiment being trained up, I think a lot of time passed.
Okay.
So Yabushige is insulted that Toranaga didn't stick around Ajiro and at least drink some sake with him.
Right.
A couple sake jokes at the beginning of the episode, too, with that woman.
Right.
Stoked that Toranaga's there, wishes she had gotten the good shit.
Yeah.
The second he rolls out, she's like, we should have gotten the cheapest shit possible.
Yeah.
Omi suggests that Yabushige could still train up his gun regiment and give it to Ishido, Lord Ishido, who is Toranaga's enemy, right? As a gift in an effort to get in his good graces because they believe Toranaga will be the losing side and that once the Council of Regents appoints a new fifth member, he's still going to be impeached.
Right.
So as we suspected, and as everyone who is watching diligently should have expected, Yabushige is still waffling between like...
Yeah, he's playing both sides.
Which way he wants to go here. Blackthorne is stomping around on all the moss, you know, pissed off about his situation. Tota Mariko explains that his consort Fuji is highborn, recently lost her husband and child, and deserves his respect, which kind of starts to shift Blackthorne's thinking about this woman. She's not just like some random peasant who's been assigned to him, right? But being his consort... gives Fuji a place, Mariko explains. And that's like a big thing here in Japanese culture and just in life in general, I think, but like really give an emphasis in Japanese culture that everyone needs purpose, right? Tota Mariko was given this same pitch by Toranaga in episode one. He's like, you lost all your purpose. Allow me as your lord to reinstall purpose for you and you can serve me now. Right. So then Mariko tells Blackthorne about the Eightfold Fence, which is the title of the episode, an impenetrable wall in the mind behind which they can retreat whenever they need. My takeaway on the Eightfold Fence was that it's basically like a meditation practice, right? That you can achieve like this peace in your mind to the point that you can hear like a rock growing, which, you know, I practice this all the time, Barrett. Yeah, like I can hear your hair growing as we speak.
Right.
And she's trying to help him in part to deal with his anger and frustration while also giving him like a bit more of the Japanese culture, right? So he better understands their ways or whatever. And a great quote in there, she says, "Do not be fooled by our politeness, our bows, our rituals. Beneath it all, we can be a great distance away, safe and alone."
Yeah, I think you make a good comparison there to meditation. That they are, through this practice of the Eightfold Fence, they are able to essentially like recede into themselves. And I think it's also kind of a callback to the Three Hearts line that we get
definitely
in an earlier episode. You know, and it's related to that idea of the third heart, which you kind of never show, you never give away. So it feels like that third heart, that's probably behind the Eightfold Fence.
Yeah,
as
that
well.
One's back there.
But yeah, it's really interesting from just like a cultural, sociological POV, right? Because like in American culture, we spend so much time talking about not bottling things up,
right?
And that, I mean, maybe that's a more modern part of American culture, especially when it comes to men but now we don't want them to do that, right?
Right.
Don't bottle your emotions up, like, you know, get more in touch with your sensitivity, all that type of thing. And like here in this kind of way of life, that's almost like encouraged.
To bottle things up.
Just to bottle things up and to live with them. But on the surface, you are calm and placid and the total picture of cool, right?
Like, and I think that's the big difference. That I think the issue in Western culture over the past, you know, however many hundreds of years, the bottling up of emotions and whatnot by men has resulted in these explosive problems.
Yeah.
The Japanese men, at least I think the pitch here from Tota Mariko is like... And it's not just the men, it's the women too.
Right, right.
They learn this in a way that's like you have this eightfold fence that you can retreat back to, like basically deal with life's problems.
Yeah.
But in a way that's you're still presenting yourself as stoic.
Yeah. Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's not like you just become an emotional mess. Anyway, I definitely occurred to me, you know, as somebody who goes to therapy once a week and talks his ass off for a full hour in an effort to deal with life. I was like, I wish I could do that.
Yeah.
Maybe I need an eightfold fence. It'd be much less expensive than the current route I'm taking. And there are obviously arguments for both things.
Yeah, exactly.
But to your point, it just gives it's showing you like the way that Japanese people dealt with this. And there's some lines from Tota Mariko later in the episode about the country, the shit they deal with, the fucking earthquakes, the wildfires, the tsunamis.
Totally.
That gives you more context to like why they have to operate the way that they do. Also, I doubt very much that there were just a bunch of therapists.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, not a occupation that
wasn't
had,
a thing yet. You know,
had come. Yeah, had been born yet.
So next, Blackthorne faces off against Omi when he refuses to give up his guns. This was a cool scene, right? He's supposed to be going to train the regiment. Fuji has given him his guns.
Mariko has brought his guns during her heart to heart.
Right,
it's like, here's a peace offering. Everything's going to be fine. Here's a couple of your guns to, like, you know, make you feel...
Pacify him a bit. Because he was pissed off earlier, like, that they wouldn't let him just carry these around.
Right. But then he wants to bring them to cannon practice or to strategy practice.
I like calling it cannon practice. Let's call it that. Yeah, and Omi is like, no, give me your fucking guns.
Yeah, yeah. Which honestly,
makes
sense on Omi's part, right?
Yeah. If I pee on someone's head and then we're going to cannon practice with that guy, I don't want that guy to be able to bring his strap.
No, he's literally bringing a gun to a knife fight.
Right.
Yeah,
I don't.
That's not, yeah.
And he peed on him, you know? He's the most at risk if this guy brings his guns, Omi. But Fuji has the idea for Blackthorne to give her the guns instead of surrendering them to Omi. And Blackthorne's like not buying this, but Tota Mariko kind of, they end up talking him into it, right? And then Omi tries to immediately take the pistols from Fuji, who immediately turns one on him. And that was cool. But my read was like, it's because she's highborn and respected, right? That he has to kind of listen to her?
I think, yes, yes. And so much of the show, so much about the Japanese culture that we're kind of being immersed in, right, is about honor.
Yeah.
And I think that between the two of them, they have that established, unwritten code that neither one of them is going to dishonor the other. And so it's like he's okay with letting her keep them because he knows that she will follow the honor code, essentially.
Yeah, I guess. It also seemed like he was a little worried she might blow his fucking head off.
Yeah, but why? But he's not worried about that with Blackthorn?
I don't know. It's a good point.
Right?
It was interesting. He folds pretty much immediately. When she turns that pistol on.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's like it's what you said as well. Once somebody that he respects and that is part of that, you know, is part of the inner
lifestyle,
circle,
the
circle of trust, you know, Robert De Niro Meet the Parents style.
Yeah.
He's like, okay, all right, fine.
Yeah.
Let's just get on to canon practice.
Anyway, that was one of my favorite scenes in the episode.
It was great.
Though.
It was great.
And as Blackthorn walks off, he's like, very good.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was good. out on the training field at canon practice.
A little bonding moment.
Yeah, very
Fuji
much so.
And Blackthorn.
And they did a great job in this episode of establishing those for both Todomoriko and Blackthorn and Fuji and Blackthorn, the three of them, right? So they head out to canon practice, and it immediately becomes evident that, well, first of all, it's not canon practice
yet.
No,
it's right. It's strategy practice.
Yeah, first, yeah. And Blackthorn does not know shit about training up foot soldiers.
Yeah.
And we kind of had a feeling this might be a problem because, like, when Torunaga offers him this Hatamoto title, you see him be like, well, I don't actually know. And then he's like, okay, I should probably take
just
this.
Just say yes, yeah.
Because I could use it to get my ship and my men back, right? Doesn't know how to train foot soldiers, but realizes, like, he can use the art of naval warfare, the things he does know, really, how to use cannons from his ship, train them up on that. And at first, Yabushige is like, I've seen fucking cannons in action. You can't, they're inaccurate.
Mm-hmm.
You can't hit specific
targets
very well that are at a distance, right? But Yabushige hasn't seen Blackthorn's cannons.
Right.
Apparently the English or the, I guess it's a Dutch ship.
Yeah, no, but it's English naval tactics, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying the cannons specifically, I'm not sure which nation of origin.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
The cannons come from, but these are better cannons than Yabushige has dealt with in the past. That's the point.
I think they're German cannons from a Dutch ship operated under the British naval methodology.
But the other pitch Blackthorn says that, like, laying siege to Osaka would take forever, months and months and months. But if they can use these cannons, they could breach the walls fairly quickly, essentially saying it would make taking Osaka very, very easy compared to doing it through siege. So Blackthorn demonstrates these things and blows their fucking minds.
Yeah.
that's basically what happens. Then it becomes canon practice.
Then it's canon practice.
Yeah. Barrett, sometimes when the end of the day rolls around, I am simply too tired to cook or don't have all the ingredients I need to make dinner, and I just want to melt into my couch and watch an episode of my favorite TV show and for a delicious meal.
Canon practice is it's taxing on the
it is.
On the old body and
after
the mind.
A long day of canon practice, I just want a delicious meal to magically appear in front of me, and that's when I turn to today's sponsor, Factor. Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and get after your goals. We're talking two-minute meals. People fuel up fast with Factor's restaurant-quality meals that are ready to heat and eat whenever you are. Pancakes, smoothies, and more. Discover a wide variety of easy options for the entire day, like breakfast, midday bites, and more. No prep, no mess meals. Factor meals are ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. Flexible for your schedule. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. I've got two kids and too many dogs, and the end of the day can be extremely chaotic as a result. So it's nice that on some nights when my wife and I are just flat out of energy, we can turn to Factor to make sure we're still eating well. I've probably had all 35 different meal options at this point. Everything Factor has delivered to me has been phenomenal. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, premium options with no cooking required. Sign up and save. We have done the math. Factor is less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. Head to factormeals.com/OCC50 and use code OCC50 to get 50% off. That's code OCC50 at factormeals.com/OCC50 to get 50% off. You can find the link and the code in the description of this episode below. Thanks to Factor for sponsoring our show. Back to Shogun. Blackthorn is, like I said, if you pay close attention over the course of the episode, when I was rewatching this morning, I realized, like, oh, he's really picking up on the Japanese language. It's one of the reasons that I was like, I think a bunch of time passes in this one. Also getting closer to Tota Mariko, making pretty good progress with the regiment, you know, teaching the guys how to pack the cannon. You gotta do all the stuff. I've never packed a cannon, so I didn't actually know what he was teaching them, but it was cool to watch. And Tota Mariko is taking diligent notes. Which I didn't really...
She's the scribe. She's jotting it all down.
I didn't know what to make of that. She's just creating the canon instruction manual.
Pretty much.
Okay.
She's the translator, right? So yeah. She knows what he's... She can hear exactly what he's saying. And
true.
She's putting it all down in Japanese so that they don't go back out there tomorrow and they're like, wait, what do we do?
What did he say?
And she's got the notes right there. She says,
I
got it right here.
She's like his TA.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Cool. She also finds and reads Blackthorn's journal.
Yeah.
Which, she's a Christian.
That's right. A Catholic.
Yes. And that was made a big point by Torinaga in episode one when he asks her for her help. He's like, it's not going to be a problem for you, is it? This dude's an enemy of your church.
Right.
And when she reads this, she finds out all of his crimes against the Portuguese, which obviously the Portuguese are the ones who converted her.
Right.
Trained her up.
Yeah.
Taught her Portuguese, you know. But it doesn't seem to be that big of an issue for her.
Yeah, there's
kinda
a little.
Weird.
I think she. There's this. The best way that I think I can explain it is that I think she is obviously very allured to. You know, she finds Blackthorn very, very alluring.
Yeah, she's into this guy.
And at the same time, I think she kind of knows that he's potentially bad news and maybe has a dark side and a little bit of a bad streak. And still not sure what to make of like this of the pillaging that he may have done in Portuguese Catholic ports or towns or whatever. Like,
right.
How bad was it? It's right here. He documented it all. So I think it's just kind of the her being a little bit torn, like knowing kind of some of the bad shit that he did, but also really liking this guy. But yeah, there's a line in here that I didn't totally understand that I probably need to go rewatch with the subs on, where he's like. They have that conversation, and then he's like, well, I've got my Lord to serve, and you've got yours.
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And I think he was talking about the Catholic Portuguese missionaries, not Torinaga in that moment, I think.
Right.
Right? So I was a little unclear about how to read the end of that conversation. Then we get a little bit more filled in with their hot tub on the cliff moment, but... But yeah, that was, it doesn't seem like she reads all that. She's skeptical. She kind of confronts him with it. And then they just move on. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is strange. I thought it was going to impact her outlook on him more.
Right.
But also maybe she's playing more of a long game with him than we realize. I don't know. There were question marks there for sure. Blackthorn suggests to Mariko that his men being returned to him would allow him to build Torinaga a navy.
Yeah.
He's like, we got one ship with these cannons, but what do you think if we had more ships with all these cannons? We would totally crush it. But she's not sold on this at all.
My take here is that she sees him
trying to manipulate the situation.
He's being kind of transparent about the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
And he's manipulating it to get what he wants, and she's like, yo, slow your roll. You don't know what the fuck we need.
Yeah, stop. She's like, stop it. You're being... We see what you're doing. Stop.
Yeah, yeah.
That he'll never be able to get Torinaga to turn against Blackthorn's enemies the way Blackthorn intends. Like, Blackthorn's trying to turn this whole thing into being about him, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And to being exclusively about a fight against the Portuguese and the Catholics. Yeah,
yeah. Then there's a baby earthquake.
Yeah.
And Mariko explains this is the scene where she's like, we've got earthquakes, tsunamis, wildfires, the death is in Japan's air and sea and earth, which is why their houses are designed to go up as quickly as they go down, which was just all very good insight again into sort of their way of life, their outlook, the way they carry themselves, right? Then moving on, Omi pillows with this woman, this courtesan, Kiku, is the one that we see him banging. To put it in,
I love you, Kiku.
Crude there, American
just random
term.
Line. Yeah, there. He's just like, I love you.
Just yelled it at her. She is the most deft and renowned courtesan in Izu, according to fxnetworks.com/shows/viewers/guide/characters. Yeah. So that's what you need to know about Kiku. And she kind of puts some poison in his ear. She's like, yeah, your uncle, Yabushige, you know, it's a shame you're not our lord.
Right.
She says to Omi, which...
I like the acknowledgement that Yabushige shows up and everybody is on edge,
yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
You never know when this dude is going to throw somebody in the old...
The boiling pot. Or
yeah.
Get
in
cannon
the
practice
in the
going.
In the cauldron, as it were.
Right? The whole town is shaking because of cannon practice already.
Yeah. Yeah.
Plus, Yabushige, a known maniac,
yeah.
Just boiling people alive. So, of course, everybody's on edge yeah. when he's there. As Blackthorn is training the regiment on chain shot, which is, look, I'm not positive about this, but I think chain shot is when it's
you're not an expert on cannon
I'm not,
practice?
Again, it's been a long time since I went to cannon practice myself, but I think it's two cannonballs with a chain attaching them.
Okay.
So
yeah,
when
yeah,
you
yeah,
fire
yeah.
it, they spin.
Yeah.
And like
okay.
in some of the, this is going to sound lame, but in some of the pirate video games I've played, you use chain shot to like take down like the mast uh-huh, of a ship uh-huh. because if you hit it right, you know,
it's more aggressive, right?
Yeah.
It's not just like the regular cannonball is just a punch through essentially.
This
does more damage.
Yeah.
Yes.
I would almost compare it to like hollow point bullets.
Right.
Like instead
right.
of just being a straight shot through yeah. with a regular bullet, it's splintering and causing a bunch
okay.
more damage.
Well, this makes sense now given the end of the episode, doesn't it?
Yes.
The chain shot is
yeah.
important. Yeah. I didn't catch the old chain shot.
Yeah, so that's that. And as Blackthorn is training the regiment on chain shot is when Lord Ishidu's men roll up and they command Yabushige to return to Osaka and renew his oath of loyalty to the Council of Regents. Yabushige goes up and talks to the messenger of Lord Ishidu, who is his old friend.
Yeah.
Something important to note here. It's his old friend, talks him into staying the night to see a demonstration of cannon practice tomorrow.
Yeah.
You come out tomorrow to cannon practice. We'll show you what we've got going on here. And then, I mean, he's suggesting, like, Ishido can use this and the cannons
yeah, right.
to defeat the Christian regents, right?
Yes.
Right? Okay.
Yes.
Or at least to scare them into being submissive.
Yeah.
Blackthorn apologizes to Fuji for initially refusing her services as consort and insulting her. He gifts her one of his two pistols as a gesture of gratitude. I would note, just when you hear pistol in the modern day and age, you don't think of, like, this massive hulking pirate pistol that
yeah,
these
a,
fools...
Yeah, a musket, essentially. It's a sawed-off musket.
It is a... Yes. It's like the size of a sawed-off shotgun.
Yeah,
it's fucking
yeah.
huge, yeah. these pistols. Gives her one of those. She gifts him her family's swords,
mm-hmm.
which felt like... I mean, him giving her a pistol felt like a big deal.
Right.
But her response,
and
like...
she one-ups the shit out of him, yeah.
Yeah, that felt like a crazy... like the best possible gift he could receive from her.
Yeah, totally.
Blackthorn also eats natto.
Yeah, I didn't look up what this was. I'm sure you did. Tell me.
It was like not that crazy of a dish. Like it's, I don't, I, that's what I'm saying. I didn't get this scene. It says natto is a traditional Japanese food made from whole soybeans that have been fermented with Bacillus subtilis var. Don't know. It's often served as a breakfast food with rice.
Okay.
I thought it was going to be like some crazy, like
fish guts,
squid
gut, yeah.
Eggs,
yeah.
You know, or cum or something.
It did. But it looked like a texture thing. It looked like a, you know, it was kind of stringy and like.
Yeah.
I think that it was, it's probably just weird.
For him?
For him.
I guess.
Yeah. But yes.
He thinks it's spoiled cheese.
He's very polite, though. He makes his way through the dish.
Right.
The,
they're all natto. Getting, they're all getting a laugh out of this. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know. It looks kind of good. I'd take some natto. Omi talks to Nagakato, who again is Torunaga's son, about his concerns over Ishido's men potentially seeing their tactics with the cannons at cannon practice tomorrow, yeah. right?
I thought it was notable and interesting how Yabushige is pretty resigned. Like, I mean, obviously, we got the line in this episode. It's like, we have life and we have death and nothing really beyond that can we control. And we know about the honor code. We know about everything. But we also know that Yabushige... is basically like core motivation, stay alive, pick the winning side.
Yes.
And Jozen, Josie, as I like to call him, Josie and Big Yaba.
Yeah.
Josie shows up and gives him this ultimatum, basically, which both end in death.
Yeah.
And he's just like, damn. Really didn't think my time was going to come this week.
Right.
You know?
Nah, yeah, it's a fucking weird reaction, really.
But he doesn't have, like, he doesn't seem to have a plan, is what I'm saying. He's like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, they're, if I don't go with them, and they lay this out, right, and here in this scene, he's like, if Yabushige does not go back to the palace with them, they will declare him an enemy.
And eventually he will be killed.
And eventually he will be killed by Ishido and his men. If he comes back with them, he's definitely going to have to commit seppuku.
Yeah.
So, like, there's no...
I think his idea is like, okay, if I wow these guys with cannon practice tomorrow, they're going to be like, look, we'll let you stay as an agent, essentially. Mm-hmm. You keep serving Torinaga, doing air quotes here. And then when the time comes, we're going to have you like flip the switch and betray Torinaga.
We'll activate
you. Yeah, something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll activate you. Yeah. Because that's the only thing I could think in terms of his lack of panic or plan.
Yeah.
Right? But Omi, other piece of it. His nephew Omi, when he's on the battlefield and Yabushige is like, he's at cannon practice. This dude has told him, hey, man, you got to come back with me right now. He's like, no, stay. And he delivers that line that's like, I cannot believe this is where my shit ends, like where my life ends. I can't believe the situation I'm in. And Omi says, like, I might have an idea. And then we see this scene with Omi talking to Torinaga's son, Nagakato, about the concerns over Ishido's men seeing the tactics. Nagakato is like, I'll handle this. Don't even tell my dad.
Yeah.
I've got a plan. I think Omi was talking Nagakato into doing some dumb shit.
Okay.
Into doing the dumb shit that he does. Now, obviously, Yabushige still freaks out at the end of the episode because...
Well, this is bad. This is still bad for Yabushige.
It does seem like it's still a huge problem
Which
for him.
Means... Probably bad for Omi, unless Omi's going to go, you know, top rope and betray a whole squad.
That's why it's confusing. But I did get the impression that Omi knew he was talking Nagakato into doing some really dumb shit.
You're right. The way that the scenes transpire, the way the order that we are giving them seems like, and this is all following the whisper in the ear from Kiku that, like, you should be the leader of this fief, of this town. And so we're all, you know, queued up here, teed up to think that he's going to try to, like, get Yabushige out of the picture.
You're right.
But I don't know how any of this is getting Yabushige out of the picture unless we probably are waiting for another shoe to drop. I think we're waiting for more moves from Omi at this point because, he's like, man, we should really call your dad.
Yeah.
And he's like, and he does seem to be playing into the insecurities of Torinaga's son here. So I think it's a TBD. We got to wait and see how this all plays out. But he definitely does not put his foot down and be like, no, don't do some dumb shit.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. Omi sees an opportunity to kind of play Yabushige by telling him, like, I think I got an idea. And then he uses Torinaga's son, Nagakato, to kind of, because now, frankly, Yabushige is no longer in a position to play both sides.
Right. No,
this is his area.
Totally.
That Ishido's men just got absolutely slaughtered in.
Yes.
So, I think you're right. Omi saw an opportunity. Okay, I can get rid of my uncle, put myself in a better position, and screw Torinaga's son.
Yeah.
It kind of puts okay, well, let's go through what happens. First of all, Blackthorn takes a nature bath, and Mariko finds him, and they have this, like, deep discussion.
Okay, what's going on here? Because isn't Blackthorn kind of caught doing something? My read was that he's like, he goes on that, this is I'm just spitballing here, because it's what I saw on screen. He's, like, walking around, he goes up to that cliff, he looks out, he sees the bay, is what I think, and he's like, yes, perfect. I feel like he's about to try to swim to the ship.
No, so what he says is beautiful. So he loves the view.
Okay.
And then there is, like, some kind of a hot spring.
So he is here just to get in the hot tub.
Bathe.
That's what he's doing.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I didn't know if he was up to no good here, and then he kind of gets caught by Mariko.
The part of him getting caught is that he's butt-ass naked.
Okay. All right.
She walks out, like, right after he's dropped trowels. Like, oh, fuck.
You got that ass on display.
Yeah, he does. And so they get into this, like, deep conversation, right, where Mariko says, I haven't even told you my family name, but it is well known in Japan. I would note she also doesn't tell us
doesn't give us any of the story beyond.
We get flashbacks. Clearly something terrible happened, right? She says it was a great injustice that stole everything from her many years ago, and that Torinaga has given her a way to seek resolution for what happened, but no further detail. So we're just kind of left to read into that.
We see one older gentleman, potentially a father,
looking extremely upset.
Yes. Yeah.
A woman like falling in the snow.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it doesn't really give you much to go off of. And then she's like, tell me about where you're from. I'm like, no, more about you. What the hell is happening here? But Blackthorne tells Mariko about London, where he was born. They draw this cool contrast because he's like, London is a disgusting fucking shithole. There's way too many people, right? He's given lines like this before where he's like, there's just hookers everywhere. Just like drawing a comparison between that and what we've seen in Osaka.
And the tranquil nature of feudal Japan.
Yeah. Very, very different, right? Bustling. But then they do like this feudal version of like dirty talk where she's like, well, tell me about like what you do there. Yeah. And he's like, ooh, well, if it was me and you there, we'd totally like go to a play.
Yeah.
Or like go on a walk.
He'd
like
show her one of the palaces.
Like, yeah. Yeah. We'd be guests of the queen.
Have a fancy feast.
Right. Yeah. To make up for that, we'd go to a play.
It
gets a little sultry there. Their backs are turned to each other. He's butt ass, right? They're both like really into it. It's a good scene. And just on the whole, they do a fantastic job of developing the relationship between these two over the course of this episode in a way that's just not point blank, like white man and Japanese woman forbidden love, right? Like it's like,
so I think there's no escaping that.
It's still there.
Right. And going like through the first 40 minutes of this episode, I was like, all right, so this is the episode where we're laying the groundwork for Blackthorne and Mariko, and it's the classic trope of, like, fish out of water, white colonizer is in a foreign land, and he's so blown away by it, and he adopts the culture, and he falls in love with a local.
Yeah, it's Pocahontas.
It's Pocahontas, exactly.
Avatar.
And take your pick. There's dozens.
Yeah.
And so it's one of the things that I know that I've read is that in the book Shogun, Blackthorne is the main character. He is like the POV character. And what I think a really smart thing that the show has done is kind of have him and Torinaga be like 1A, 1B, and that kind of flips and flops and rotates. But like they are both main characters. And so we get both stories as like our mains. And so for me, the Torinaga stuff, the politics, has been the part that I've really, really loved. And then when that includes Blackthorne, it's dope because you get the scenes like the map scene.
Yeah.
And then this whole thing about Blackthorne, like his journey in Japan as he kind of like falls in love with the culture. And I think we can kind of make a guess as to where that might go, but I could be wrong. That's all kind of like, yeah, okay. Like whatever. Then this episode turns and gives you the bang of a finale. And it kind of like leaves your jaw on the floor. But, all that to say, that you can't help but see some of the Pocahontas stuff happening here. I think they do as good a job as they can with it. To adding depth, yes.
Right. Yeah. And I think in this case, you see the draw being like Blackthorne represents freedom in a way, right?
Yeah.
His lifestyle, what he's looking for, what's appealing to him, right? I mean, in episode 3, I think he tells us, like, I had a full-blown family, wife, kids and shit, but I love the sea so much that I just bounced.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like some other reason. Like, he did a murder and he had to escape or something, right? Like, at least not that he's given us.
Yeah, he just loves those salty seas.
Yeah, you got to get out there to the sea, which is why he's so bummed about not getting his ship back.
Right.
And then Mariko represents, like, the tranquil and honorable existence of the Japanese people, which is, he's got none of that going for him.
Yeah.
No tranquility. No real honor.
No chill. This guy's got no chill.
He's a pirate, right? So yeah, they both have this element that they see in the other that's attractive, I think, and that you can actually believe a little more than it just being the age old trope that's very played out,
right?
And slightly offensive, right? So yeah, that's it. I'm with you. I think they did their best to kind of make to give us more, so that it's a little easier to swallow.
Well, it, you know, I guess it's like at least they did at least they took this episode to build it, like you're saying, rather than just kind of like giving us a montage of him learning to fight with samurai swords or some shit.
And her like watching from a balcony and like them going on a walk. Yeah, no, yeah, this was good. This was good. Okay, so at night, Blackthorn sleeps. This was tough to like decipher exactly what happened. Because I think, having rewatched it this morning to make the outline, I'm pretty sure Fuji is the one that's like...
Yeah, she like tucks him in.
She's like, good night.
Yep.
Tucks him in. Then she leaves. Because on my first watch, I thought that was Tota Mariko that tucks him in, leaves, and then she's like...
Let me slip into something more comfortable?
Yes. Yes. Fucking Austin Powers. Yes. Yes, dude. Like, I thought that... I was so confused.
Yeah, no, it's the Fuji...
Fuji tucks him in.
Yeah.
She leaves. Tota Mariko
sneaks in there. Yeah.
And they pillow.
Yeah, yeah.
They do some pillowing. So then the next morning... Tota Mariko says she and Fuji thought a night with a courtesan. Damn it. I'm so close to getting through this.
Courtesan.
A courtesan would do Blackthorn like some good, right? Like as she said in an earlier episode, like they think pillowing is like an essential part of life, blah, blah, blah. And she says like, the courtesan was acceptable then? I'm glad to hear it. Which, it, just in this conversation, I was like, wait, wasn't it you? Wasn't she the courtesan? And his response is like, I don't understand. You're not a... Yes, that was a very thoughtful gift.
Yeah.
But like, so basically, she's not...
She doesn't want
to admit to Fuji.
Right.
Okay. Okay, that's okay.
Yeah. Even though they're talking in a different language, she's kind of like trying to like, yo, be discreet about this.
Okay, got it. We're not telling everybody.
We're not telling everybody that we're
pillowing.
We're
not even telling your consort or whatever she's... Exactly. Yes.
That's
okay,
right.
Got it. Yeah. Got it. Okay. Okay, cool. So... Tota Mariko and Fuji have a conversation that actually did happen. Like, this guy could use a little pillowing with a courtesan. But then Tota Mariko is like, and that courtesan is me.
Yeah.
But doesn't tell Fuji. Got it.
Yes,
thank you, Barry.
Yes.
Okay. And then, of course, at the demonstration of their artillery, things do not go off without a hitch. Tornaga's son, Nagakato, executes his, like, secret plan to...
He pulls a fast one on him.
Blow the living shit out of Ishido's men with cannons... I mean, first of all, I was like, damn, those things are accurate.
Yeah, and I think he's using the chain shot based on the way that bodies are flying
apart.
Which
had not occurred to me until you said it in this episode. Definitely.
Horses cut in half, bodies flying apart. Yeah.
Limbs are going left and right.
It's pretty gruesome.
It was. Yeah. It was brutal. And as Tota Mariko says, it is war. And I think we kind of already sussed out exactly what this all entails.
Yeah.
I think Omi knew... He would get this idiot Nagakato to do what he did or something that would put Yabushige and Torunaga in a position where the only option they had was to full-blown declare war on this Council of Regents. I'm also assuming, based on Ishido sending his messenger guy to come and get Yabushige, that they had either already installed a fifth regent or that they were intending on Yabushige being the fifth regent, I guess regardless...
I mean, based on the conversations, I don't think so, because Yabushige is pretty certain that it's seppuku if he goes back.
Yeah, but I was under the impression these guys, the Council of Regents, can't really do anything until they're complete again.
Well, they can't impeach Torunaga until they're complete again.
Okay.
But I think they could definitely be like, Yabushige...
Get over here.
Yeah, it's time for the White Room. Yeah.
Got you.
This was crazy. And I fully, like, halfway through the episode, I was fully like, okay, this is our slower paced one. We're story building, we're character building, we're setting up for what's to come here in a classic episode 4. And then they just drop the bomb at the end, the cannon bomb, as it, you know, as it turns out. And I mean, I was shook, dude. I was like, oh fuck.
Yeah.
And then it's like this brutal, gruesome ending. And then like the episode, she's like, it's war. And the episode ends. And I'm like, oh, okay. All right. Great. It's 11:20. No time for a chaser.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I thought it was nice how they ended up marrying the two and kind of like still gave you like a big moment, a big shift in the plot here. And I think back to the original question, right? Like, was leaving everybody to deal with this on their own a Torunaga misstep? Or did he, it was this kind of part of the plan to like bounce, let crazy shit go down, which he expected to happen with all of, with
this group,
with all these nincompoops in charge.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I lean more towards Misstep, although we don't actually know where he is or what he's doing right now.
Yeah, and that's what makes me lean more in the other direction.
Okay.
The fact that they didn't give us any... He wasn't like, now I'm going to leave and go do this specific thing.
Yeah.
Makes
just
me
like,
think...
Yeah, he's just like, I got business to attend to.
Yeah, because like it seems like he has known that war is an inevitability.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's the one who said, as his jackass son Nagakato reminds us in this episode, like, never make the first move. Make your enemies do it for you.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like he wasn't willing to, either for reasons of honor or strategy, maybe both, he didn't want to be the one to have to throw the first stone or fire the first shot or whatever. And leaving this group, because I'm just looking at it on paper. The guy seems really bright. As Todomariko has said, and as we have seen, he's always one step ahead. He's known. He's famous, right, for his trickery. So I have a hard time rationalizing, like, he's just that dumb to leave this kid, his kid, who is very clearly kind of a big dumb, like Joffrey-type character, right? Like, one of our listeners tweeted it as, like, he went full Joffrey. You never go full Joffrey. Like, it... Nothing about Nagakato makes me think his dad would, like, trust him to, like, make the right decisions and be a good leader and, like, do things by the book. So I feel like he left all these people knowing something explosive would happen. Now, whether or not he could have known it would be this extreme.
Right, right.
Don't know.
Yeah.
Assume in episode 5 we're going to get some type of reaction.
I would presume that Toranaga is back in the picture for episode 5.
Yeah. Wherever he went, he's going to need to get back here fairly quickly because things are unraveling. And as Todomariko said, it is war now. There's no doubt. Nothing can be done to stop this. It's on. Which, to your point, didn't really see that happening as early as it has. I thought, like, episode, like, 7.
Yeah.
We'd have, like, a climactic moment that, like, set up a big stage for the final few episodes of battle.
Right, right.
But this is making it feel like we might get several episodes of, like, insane, intense violence, or maybe a few, and then, like, the after,
right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Either way. It was a big explosive ending to this episode 4. And I think this was my favorite episode all around episode so far, just because we do get kind of further immersed into the culture as far as like Blackthorn. And
yeah, I would have gone the other way. I would have said it was my least favorite. Not that I thought it was a bad episode. It just did have the love story, the romance blossoming. And that's not really my favorite part of the story.
No, it's not my favorite either, but I appreciated it. I don't know. It's kind of fun. Blackthorn is a really fun character.
I like Blackthorn. The other thing that, and this is podcast brain now, but like, I couldn't really figure out a tie for Eightfold Fence into anything other than the Eightfold Fence scene.
Oh, yeah. I have no idea what that means.
And I wanted a little bit, I was hoping for a little bit more connection to that because it sounded so cool.
Yeah.
When, like, the episode title comes up and I'm like, ooh, Eightfold Fence. Wonder how that's going to tie.
I kind of assume it's something that's, there's like some specific reference. That's a specific reference point.
Yeah.
But when I Google the Eightfold Fence, it's just all photos from this episode.
Okay.
I'm like, that has to be something though, right? Because I was kind of looking for more explanation at some point in terms of like why an Eightfold Fence? What does Eightfold mean?
Yeah.
I in my head, I was seeing like a fence that's 8 fences deep,
uh-huh.
like 8 fences on top of each other, like a super fence, you know?
Yeah.
But who, I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, that was that.
You know what I think it is? No, that doesn't make any sense. I was thinking about like those, I think this comes from Japanese culture, you know, like a wardrobe, like a folding, the thing that you put up to kind of like change behind.
Yeah.
That thing kind of folds.
A little bit.
Is that an eightfold? But it's not a fence, really.
I don't know. I Googled what is an eightfold fence, and still, only just, Shogun.
Okay.
Only Shogun. And I mean, we know eightfold means 8 times.
Yeah.
Like 8x, right?
And a fold is when you put a crease in something.
Right.
So an eightfold, you'd be folding something 8 times.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Maybe somebody in the audience has some insight for us and they can call
into
the
hotline.
But if
you say that something is tenfold, right, that means like 10 times, like 10x.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I
don't know. That's why I thought about a fence that was eight deep. Yeah, 8 deep.
Yeah.
If you know, call in.
Yeah, okay. Now we sound like idiots, so
we like to end the show on a low note. Where we both sound like ignorant morons. That's the way we like to do things here.
Can I? You know what? Do you have any more Shogun takes?
No, that's it.
Can I drop in something that I thought about?
Yeah.
In Dune.
Yes.
Okay. So you know how Lady Margot secures the bloodline,
right?
by getting spoilers for Dune.
Part if you don't want Dune Part Two spoilers, get out of here.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll be back on. No, we'll be,
see you on Patreon.
No, we'll see you on Patreon next week.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And with Shogun regular episode 5 coverage of Shogun next week. Okay,
yeah.
Dune spoilers ahead. So Lady Margot secures the bloodline by sleeping with Fade Rotha,
right,
and becoming impregnated by him,
right.
I don't think Fade Rotha knows that,
right.
So the baby born to Lady Margot that is a Harkonnen of Fade Rotha's descent will just be out there in the world not knowing what it is. That got me thinking. Some Bene Gesserit did this to the Baron, and that's where Paul's mom, Lady Jessica, came from.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
I made that connection, like, we're driving around thinking about Dune, and I was like, oh,
same exact
shit.
Strategy.
That's what they did.
Yes.
I feel positive that, like, he got, you know, he got seduced by a Benny.
Yeah.
And that's
the
how,
Benny Jezzy.
By the Benny Jezzy.
Yeah.
And that's how Lady Jessica came to be, and she's grown up Benny.
Yeah, but the other thing about that whole plot line that I was, like, thinking about after the fact is, like, okay, so what... Like, is this going to come into play in the third movie? That just seems like there's so much shit for them to try to wrap up. They have to do, like, an intergalactic holy war. You've got Paul's sister, who we assume Anya Taylor-Joy's character is going to be coming into play, so we think there's going to be a time jump. We have no idea what's going on with...
But I think the time jump would be perfect, because this descendant of the... you know, he's got Baron and Fade Rotha, not Baron, blood in there.
Yeah.
Well, he's going to be like 15 years old and looking for vengeance against Paul, who killed both of them.
Well, but how do you make our boy Timothée Chalamet?
How do you age him up?
Look 15 years older.
I'm leaving that one to Denis V.
That's what I'm saying. I think the next movie is going to be crazy complicated.
Yeah.
And I did hear rumblings that, like, the book, I guess part 1 and 2 were just this one book, right? Dune book 1.
Here's another thing. How old do you think Paul's supposed to be in these two films?
That's a good question.
Because my guess is that in the books, he's probably like 16.
Oh, 15. Man, I don't know. Because it's like in Game of Thrones, remember?
Right,
like, the characters are all like 12.
Old. Yes.
They can't obviously have a bunch of 12-year-olds running around.
If the fast forward is, oh, he's 30 now.
Okay.
Well, then you just, like, so I don't know, give him like a couple of wispy grays and, like,
and then call it a day.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, yeah. I'm really curious to see for part 3 or if they call it something different, like Messiah, then, like, what is going to, how are they going to cover all these different bases? How do they wrap this thing up? Because you have to doubt that they do more than 3, right? They like to do trilogies, right?
Do I think they'll do more than 3?
Yeah, I mean, so I think they'd probably look to wrap this thing up in the third one.
Yes, and I have no idea how they'll do that.
God, there's a lot of loose ends and a lot to take care of and a lot to deal with.
Denny may have even said that this is going to take a couple years at least
for them to make it. Yeah.
I
assume.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't expect Dune Part 3 until like 27 at the earliest.
27, 28, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That would make sense. If you want to hear Barrett and I's entire discussion on Dune Part 2, patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. Free 7-day trial available now. Get in the Clam Fam tier if you just want the audio. Get in the Mollusk Militia tier if you want the video as well. We appreciate y'all, everybody who's listening and watching. If you're watching on YouTube, by the way, hit the subscribe button, leave us a comment, give us a like as well. If you're listening on the podcast platforms and you didn't know, we are on youtube.com/@oystersclamscockles with full video. Get in there and enjoy. And as Barrett said, we will be back next week with an episode just like this one, covering chapter 5 of Shogun from Hulu/FX, and then we'll be back next week on Patreon with hotline calls from the Mollusk Militia on Patreon, covering episodes 4 and 5. Doing 2. Because this week on Patreon, we did Dune. Yeah. That'll do it for today's show. Thanks for being here again. For more from me, Ross Bolin, check out the Ross Bolin podcast, wherever podcasts are played. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter @WRBolin. Mr. Dudley, where can the people keep up with you?
Everybody can see what I'm up to on Instagram @BarrettDudley, 2 R's, 2 T's, DUDLEY, Star Wars. Rhymes with whoas.
Hooah! Go to bolinmedia.com/shop to grab yourself some merch. We appreciate y'all. Looking forward to hearing everyone's reactions on Patreon next week and reading them on social media. Until next time, Toranaga-sama! Ho! Oh!